Mr. Burgundy, you have a massive erection.
You can throw out all those great backs and great quarterbacks and great defensive players throughout the country and in this conference. But there's going to be one team that's going to play solely as a team. No man is more important than the team. No coach is more important than the team. You raise me
up. This is Michigan, for God's sakes.
This is The Sophisticated Boner, a Michigan Man podcast, for your listening pleasure. Good evening, and welcome to The Sophisticated Boner, a Michigan Man podcast, a podcast that tries not to take its howdiness and snottiness too seriously. I am your host, Mark the Nomad, and you can follow me on Twitter, at Mark the Nomad, and I'm joined by my co-host, our fearless leader, the sole proprietor of TBH Report, the Big House Report. You can follow him at TBH Report. I know I'm being repetitive. Josh Henschke, how are you tonight?
I'm doing very well, and I feel like I should start this podcast by saying Jadeveon Clowney, because that's the right thing to do.
Absolutely. If it being the first week of college football season, we can't start without having something to overhype, to overplay. So if you were watching the first game of the season, the South Carolina-North Carolina game, and you were playing a drinking game about how many times ESPN said Jadeveon Clowney, you died on Thursday night. So rest in peace.
Yep, R.I.P.
So tonight on the podcast, we are going to do our first Big Ten roundup, where we shoot around the Big Ten, go over the scores, talk about some highlights of the games, future opponents. We'll definitely go in depth about Michigan's stellar 59-9 win over the Central Michigan Chippewas, and then we'll wrap it up by doing a slight preview of the Notre Dame game coming up on Saturday. And later this week, we will be joined by the Subway Domer, which is another podcast, one of the more higher rated podcasts on the college and high school network. So first things first, let's do a couple of thoughts on the Central Michigan game. What stood out to you, man? I mean, like, I gotta say, I was really kind of shocked at how Devin Gardner played, and not in a positive way. I mean, the score doesn't indicate it, but they're gonna need better passing output from Devin Gardner if they're gonna stand a chance in the big.
Well, I slightly disagree there. I mean, there's obviously signs of rust from Devin Gardner yesterday, but I didn't think he was, I don't know, flat out awful. I mean, he definitely had his moments of pure brilliance where, you know, he hit, you know, wide open Drew Dealio after scrambling around a little bit, kind of reminiscent of what he did against Minnesota. He had a couple of solid rushes, too. But it's funny that you mentioned that, too, because I literally just posted about this, about what I learned from Central Michigan, and I think the biggest thing I found was Dennis Norfleet. I think he has the potential to be a huge game changer for the team this year. I mean, he's got the speed, he's got the agility. I'm assuming he has, you know, the hands for the reception. I mean, he reminds me of someone like a Steve Breston. I guess I don't want to name call or drop names too quickly, but I definitely think he has, you know, that playmaking ability that Michigan's been missing since he left.
Well, I definitely agree with you that it may be an overreaction to say that Devin Gardner didn't, you know, necessarily have a bad game, but on he threw two interceptions, and both of them were forced throws in bad situations. The first one, that where he tried to force the ball to Dealio, to me was inexcusable. He stared the receiver down, and if the Central Michigan defense can jump that route, then someone else with more talent's going to jump that route. Instead, they're going to take it to the house, and it's going to be a pick six. Ohio State with Braxton Miller did the exact same thing, and he threw the ball right into the chest of Khalil Mack, and he took it back for a touchdown, because when you face a talented defensive back who's smart and knows what's going on, you can't telegraph your throws like that. Now, the second interception on the long bomb, the first quote-unquote arm punt of the year to Jeremy Gallen, that was just a force, and you see Michigan's lack of depth at wide receiver there, because the two guys with the most returning starts and experience in the Michigan wide receiver core were the guys that Devin was forcing those passes to. He did have some brilliant moments. That 22-yard scramble for a touchdown was amazing. And just his overall escapability and you know, his playmaking ability, getting that ball to Dealio, he's definitely got all the goods. He's just got to be smarter with the football, especially when you get closer to the Big Ten season. If he makes those mistakes against Notre Dame, do we beat Notre Dame?
I would like to still think so, but I doubt it. I mean, it's with the dumb penalties they had yesterday, I don't think they would beat them. I agree that those passes were forced. That pick there that he gave up close to their own red zone, their own end zone, that's definitely inexcusable. And that kind of passing probably won't fly against Notre Dame or pretty much anyone in the Big Ten, really.
I totally agree with you on your assessment of North Fleet, and I hate to be the devil's advocate, and you know, obviously we're not going to agree on everything, but when Dennis Norfleet, he's got all the confidence in the world, but when he muffed that punt for no other reason when he should have just let it out of bounds, I mean, those are the kind of boneheaded mental mistakes that drive coaches crazy. Central Michigan gets off a good punt, it's about to roll out of bounds, and instead he tries to be a hero, runs over and touches the ball, and could have been a catastrophic turnover earlier in the game. Now, I know, again, the final score doesn't reflect that, but when you play a team with more talent, they will take advantage of your mistakes.
No, I agree with that. I definitely, you know, that wasn't the smartest play in the world. I can see why he tried to, you know, pick it up, because they were probably, what, going to be, you know, by their 10-yard line by the time that punt was going to roll out of bounds. I mean, I could see why he wanted to gain more extra yards, but I probably would have expected him to just let that one roll out of bounds on that one, because probably not the best play.
Absolutely. But other than that, the running game, hands down, was the best that I've seen it in a long time. And I know we were spoiled in the Lloyd Carr era. We were spoiled with Gary Moeller when you would tend to blow out those home openers. But those last years under Rich Rodriguez, whenever we would have a home opener, it was no guarantee. And I remember Utah came in and, you know, they pulled out a win in Rich Rodriguez's first game as head coach. I mean, those were dark times for us. I understand that. It's nice to get back to the home opener being a good warm-up, a good indicator of what your team can do, what you can expect. And it sure as hell felt nice not getting completely our asses handed to us like last year in the opener against Alabama. I'm all for scheduling a bunch of shit teams to stroke our egos and make us feel better. I apologize to the Chippewas, but you pay these teams to kick their ass. You pay a Central Michigan team to take their beating and be that sacrifice. So bravo to Brady Hoke and Greg Madison and Al Borges for putting together a game plan. Al Borges just, I don't know what it is. It's something about his play calling and the things that he does. It irks me the wrong way, man. Like, they talked about all week, we're going to run the ball, we're going to run the ball, we're going to run the ball. And eventually they did, but they start the game out with forced passes and terrible drives. And it's just, his play calling ability to me is a hindrance to this team going forward.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that actually. I know they were talking about, yeah, hard nose running, man ball, we're gonna jam it up their throats. But I think, you know, a lot of that's probably by design considering who the opponent is. I think they're really gonna open up the playbook next week when they face Notre Dame. I don't know, it's really tough to say, but I think this isn't what to expect from the Michigan offense.
I hate to cut you off here. But did you just say open up the playbook? Because are we under the impression that Michigan showed a lot? Because based on Brian Kelly's comments today, I don't know if it was a slight jab, but the justification for them only scoring 28 points on Temple was, well, we didn't want to show them a lot. We didn't want to really, we didn't want to give away our hand before the Michigan game. Did you see anything out of Michigan that seemed like the razzle-dazzle besides the reverse play they ran? I'm not really sure where Brian Kelly's coming from.
Yeah, well, he's probably too busy worrying about the backwards arm pass from Tommy Rees. But other than that, I don't know. He likes to talk, and I think what his words today are probably going to get backfiring. He's probably going to get smacked in the mouth because of it, but that's all right. We'll wait until next Saturday to decide who is the last one talking.
Well, you know, there's been a lot of – I don't know even if I believe in the sense of that there are things that can be bulletin board material. I've never believed that. I also never thought that, you know, they should have used Bo's passing for the 06 game as motivation. It's like Lloyd said, if you're not motivated for the game before that happened, then you shouldn't be playing football. And the idea that you have to motivate yourself based on what somebody else says – I've never really bought into that, but if there ever was a case where that holds true, this Michigan-Notre Dame game has all those quote-unquote storylines that College Game Day looks for, with Hoke calling them chicken and saying, you know, they're backing out of the series, they're keeping the series with Michigan State, they're going to keep the series with Purdue, USC, Navy, but they're backing out on Michigan. There's been plenty of bulletin board material on both sides, so I think they're both going to be pretty revved up for this game on Saturday, under the lights, number two, a game that I had to give up tickets for because I had to get my car fixed, and I'm supremely disappointed that I'm not going to be there, because I just see hundreds of amazing things going on that weekend, and I'm going to be sad panda sitting at home going, oh, well, you know, I get to just sit at home and watch it with my family, and that sounds incredibly exciting.
Yeah, I missed it last time, and I'm gonna be there again this weekend. And I
piece of shit.
I'm incredibly looking forward to it. It's gonna be amazing. I mean, the atmosphere yesterday was electric. I can't even imagine what it's gonna be like under the lights. Well, I can't wait.
Do me a favor. If I send you a cardboard cutout of myself, will you take pictures with me at the Under the Lights game, kind of like up in the air, and just send them to me as if I was there? Like, if I just do like a celebratory looking pose and put it on cardboard, can you just take me around Ann Arbor and you know, let me be a part of this?
I'll even put you on College Game Day.
That would be fantastic. Yeah. See, that's another thing. College Game Day is going to be there. There's that MGO blog event that the night before. The game itself, the tailgate. It's a whole big basket of fuck you right to my ego and right to my just, ugh. A 32 years old, two kids, having the opportunity to go. It's just like, well, adulthood went ahead and stopped that.
Yep. It's a gut punch right there.
Yeah, I'm still feeling it in my chest. All right, so we're going to introduce a new segment today. We're going to do a quick transition. As you can see, we're still working out the kinks on this podcast, so please bear with us. And if we have any, I don't know, pronunciation errors or spelling errors for people's names, you be sure to email those to us so we can get proper corrections, because we are proper journalists, and we want to make sure that we are as accurate as humanly possible. So thank you for your criticism. Let's go on to the Big Ten recap. Oh, did you hear my GarageBand skills where I just took my own voice and distorted it and put some alien effects on it because we have such high production value here at the Sophisticated Boner?
Yeah, it's, you know, I had to give you a budget, so the budget's...
negative, you know, $10 because we have to pay for the podcast?
Yeah, we spend it all on this thing. So.
Send your donations to @thebighousereport.com. Appreciate it.
Yes.
All right, so let's take a look at the Big Ten scoreboard, starting with Thursday night. We had Indiana taking on Indiana State, and the Hoosiers, while they were down early in that game and Twitter was ablaze, there was a point in time where they were down 7-0, but they ended up winning that game, blowing the doors off of Indiana State 73-35. So we take a look at some of the Indiana Twitter sphere, and we're going to go with @ Crimson Quarry, the SB Nation site for the Indiana Hoosiers, who said, "I said IU would score 34 points tonight. They've more than doubled that." You've got a confident Indiana squad who returns a bunch of starters, albeit starters who were had a rough year last year, but there's never a bad thing bringing back returning talent. What do you think about Indiana this year? Do you know enough about them to say they're going to make a bowl? Does Indiana make a bowl game this year?
I think so. I was really impressed with their 73 points. Thursday.
How can you not be?
I know. I mean, granted, it's against Indiana State, but still, I mean, it's impressive. I've been saying all off season that, you know, people will be pleasantly surprised. Well, I don't wouldn't say pleasantly, depending on who you are as a fan, but you'll be surprised with Indiana this year. I mean, they've got a great quarterback in Trey Roberson. He's very athletic. He's got a great arm, and they've got a lot of weapons on offense. So I think they'll definitely – I think they'll make a bowl. I don't know whether they'll win it, but I think they'll make a bowl, and I think, you know, they'll make – they'll have a good run in the conference this year. But, you know, they're not going to bring down any Giants, but they'll be pretty good this year.
All right, so moving on, we're on the Thursday night games, the season opener, and the Minnesota Golden Gophers took on UNLV. Again, this was a situation where UNLV got up on Minnesota early, but once the game, everyone settled down, got rid of those early game jitters, Minnesota goes on to win 51-23, easy for me to say. And we've got a direct message here from at MV of DT. Follow him. And his thoughts on the game were, we won by 4 touchdowns and scored 51 points for the first time in 7 years. All nagging concerns and takeaways are relative considering the past 6 years. And this is a team that has struggled. I mean, that's an understatement. And with Jerry Kill, best mustache in the game in the Big Ten right now, he's got those guys playing better. He's got talent, albeit, you know, 3-4-star talent in Minnesota. And you're starting to see it reflect in these home openers. This was a game that Minnesota loses 4 years ago. So what are your thoughts?
Well, to be honest, I watched probably about a quarter and a half of that game, and I was bored to tears. So I was honest. I was
Big Ten football.
They even scored. Yeah, exactly. I was honestly surprised they even scored, what, 50-some points, because it was like, I don't even know, like 7-3 going into the second quarter. So I'm just like, oh, man, this game sucks. Minnesota's Minnesota. But I'm pleasantly surprised that they actually scored 51 points on a terrible UNLV team.
Now, you can't say Minnesota sucks, man. I mean, they have one of our longest rivalries. We celebrate that rivalry every time this podcast is on. If you are fortunate enough or patient enough to make it all the way to the end of the podcast, we always play Glenn Miller's Little Brown Jug to play the podcast out because, you know, we like that little trivia piece, and it's kind of a sophisticated, nose up in the air, sipping on the wine kind of song, Glenn Miller, big band, to play us out.
Yeah, and to quote Brian Kelly, they are actually one of our traditional rivalries.
Oh,
that's what
yeah.
we consider.
Yeah, you play since 1887, and God forbid you actually call them a rivalry. But you know what? I don't want to talk like that. I don't want to start sounding like Sparty, who's saying, oh, they don't think we're their rivals. It's whatever. It really is. If they're going to go to the ACC, they're going to do their thing. Notre Dame is a national brand in their own thoughts and minds. And just let Notre Dame be Notre Dame. And they can blow the doors off of Purdue. They can blow the doors off of Michigan State. And we'll gladly take the 23-16 record we have against them in the rivalry. So let's talk a little bit about Sparty. They played the power, the strength, the national presence that is the Western Michigan Broncos, and their defense outscored their offense. So we got a direct message from Mike Wilson. You can follow him at Mike W. Scout. And his response was kind of funny. I asked everybody, can you give me your emotional state on the team after that first game? And his was, the world is ending. Maxwell can't throw. Cook can't throw. There is no office. There is no offense. Will the sun come up tomorrow? Hard to tell. Go defense. So, sorry for butchering that, Mike, but I thought that was very funny. Their defense is stout, and this is going to piss Michigan fans off, but that interception that Denard had in that game was Charles Woodson against Michigan State-esque. I mean, he got up in the air, scooped it with one hand, maintained control, and took it all the way to the ground. And not to mention the fact that he had a pick six earlier in that game. But you've got 4 quarterbacks and 2 of them playing right now. And they've got to get some stuff right before they get to the meat of their schedule. Granted, they don't play Michigan until November. But talk a little bit about Sparty, man. What do you think?
Well, you know, we mentioned it, what, a week ago, that their defense is going to keep them in a lot of games. And we saw that against Western. You know, their defense is stout, like you said. They've got a great defense. But the biggest question mark, again, is their quarterbacks. Does Maxwell put the team under his back? or is it Cook's job, or is it someone like Damian Terry? Do they burn a red shirt for him? That's the question. I don't know if they can be successful with Maxwell or Cook. So that's going to be the biggest question mark going on for the season. I think the receivers will probably start catching the ball again, and they'll probably rely on Bulla as their running back. But if they expect to win any ball games in the conference, they need to figure out their quarterback situation fast. Because as a Michigan fan, I know what it's like to have two quarterbacks in Threat and Sheridan, and they probably
neither of which that you wanted.
Yeah, they're probably just as bad as those two. So, and that's frightening. If I'm a Spartan fan, that's pretty frightening.
Let's take a look at the stat line. Michigan State holds Western Michigan to 204 total yards. They force four turnovers. They score on two of them. But Zach Terrell from Western Michigan only threw for 120 yards in that game, but he led all passers for any team. Andrew Maxwell's stat line, 11 for 21, 74 yards.
Awful. That's
3.5 terrible. Yards.
Terrible.
And instability at the quarterback position, not knowing who's going to be running the ball. Langford for Michigan State had 20 carries for 94 yards. And then you've got the quarterback Cook, who averaged 8.8 yards a carry. I think Cook's got to be the guy. Andrew Maxwell has shown over the course of last season that he cannot get it done. Cook came in the bowl game, brought them back, and he adds that third dimension. I was talking I mentioned this to a couple of Michigan State guys that I talk to and follow. He's basically, a poor man's Michigan State Denard Robinson. He's going to make some electrifying plays. He's going to do things with his feet that Andrew Maxwell can't do, but he's going to make some decisions that's going to have you scratching your head. He's going to throw bad picks, but is the risk reward worth it? I think it is. I think Cook's got to be starting. And if not him, they're going to have to burn that redshirt on Terry, because they've got to have production at that position. They've got talent at the wide receivers, but who's going to get them the damn ball?
Right. I agree. I think Cook should be the guy. I've always been a huge Damian Terry fan. And I think, honestly, I would love to see Terry start there, and I think he'll do very well eventually, but they need a quarterback. They need to figure out, and they need to stick with one. They can't keep doing the shuffling stuff, because you know what they always say, if you have more than one quarterback, you don't have one at all.
Cliche alert.
Totally cliche, but they need to figure it out, or they're not going to do well this season at all. I mean, their defense can't do everything for them.
All right, so let's move on to the early game on Saturday. Let's talk a little Ohio State football. I'm not going to call them Ohio. I think that's the stupidest shit on the planet. They're Ohio State. Who cares? Mm-hmm. But they score 40 points on the University of Buffalo, the Mighty Bulls. But there were some defensive question marks going into the season, and I don't think any of them were really answered. Their offense looks like it could hum, and Braxton Miller – they could have easily put up 54 or 60 points. I know Braxton Miller, he missed a couple of wide open dudes, and they got some great production out of Jordan Hall. And Buffalo is no slouch. They're going to beat some people in the MAC with that defense. Like I mentioned Khalil Mack earlier, the guy's a beast. He was all over the field. He had that 45-yard interception return. But you look at Braxton Miller's stat line, 15 for 22, 178 yards, two touchdowns, one interception, but he also had 77 yards on 17 carries and had a 40-yard run that really seemed to kind of take the wind out of the sails of Buffalo, who kept it close for a good chunk. I mean, there was a point in the third quarter where they were only down 10, but Ohio State, they yield 258 total yards, but it's a very balanced, 185 through the air. They gave up some rushing yards, and Buffalo, they're a sacrifice. You would think that they would be able to put them away a little bit more. What are your thoughts on the Buckeyes?
I think they had a good game. I don't think, the Ohio State was, a giant. I mean, they obviously could have done a lot of things better, but I think Buckeye fans should be impressed with Jordan Hall. I guess he's the fifth leading rusher in the nation right now after his 150-something-yard game. So He's definitely a good replacement for Carlos Hyde whenever he's coming back next game or something like that.
I think he's out 3 games.
3 games? Okay, well, whenever he comes back. I think Hall will be a great replacement. You know, as far as Braxton Miller goes, he's going to have his days where fans are going to be like, what the heck is going on? And, you know, I think yesterday, I don't think it was one of those games, but he definitely could have done a lot of things better, especially if he wants to win the Heisman this year like everyone's talking about. He's obviously got some kinks to iron out, as, you know, most quarterbacks will to start the year because all of that rust. But overall, it's probably just another, you know, another decent win by the Buckeyes. And that'll probably, you'll see it often this year. Yeah, the usual.
So we got a quote from 11 Warriors at 11W. Easily the best Buckeye blog. If you're going to go and read something Buckeye, I don't know why you would, but if you're going to go read something Buckeye, go to 11 Warriors. They do a hell of a job. They cover recruiting top shelf. They write good pieces. They take subtle jabs at Michigan, and who wouldn't? It's the rivalry. But here is the emotional state from 11 Warriors going into the season after that first game. Confident, some wrinkles to iron out, and the youth will have to learn to play, but the schedule permits that. Reinforcements coming too. And you mentioned reinforcements. We talk about the Buckeye defense and some of the adjustments they had to make, but they didn't play without Roby. They didn't have Carlos Hyde in the game. So they've got a lot of talent sitting on the sidelines waiting to get back in. And Roby changes the dynamic of that defense. He is a shutdown corner. He's a top 10 pick in the NFL draft next year. And they're going to be able to do more with him at the helm. They have to go out to face Cal, which is a pretty good segue into our Northwestern game. In the Legends, we've got Nebraska, we've got Northwestern, we've got Michigan State as the main opposition for Michigan getting to its first Big Ten title game. Nebraska goes out to face Cal, and the Buckeyes are going to have to go out there too. And that game got a lot closer. I mean, it wasn't decided until late. I know we're jumping around, and I know that was the last game to play last night. Northwestern comes away with a win, 44-30, but there was a point in the third quarter where it was only 9 minutes left in the third quarter. Cal goes up on them. They were really saved by Connor Ellis's 2 interception returns for touchdowns, one for 56 yards and the other for 40 yards. Their defense, say it with me, Northwestern's defense actually won that game for them. And they had a scary moment because the guy, the quarterback, the point man for their offense, Kane Coulter, left the game with a concussion. That's got to be concerning for Northwestern fans, considering how much hype has gone into their season this year. But Trevor Siemian, their backup, well, you can't even call him the backup. It's like 1A and 1B. Trevor Siemian comes in and throws for 276 yards and a touchdown, but he did have a couple picks in the game. What do you think? Is Northwestern the same team without Kane Coulter?
Absolutely. You know, Kane Coulter and Venrick Mark, they're your livelihood on their offense, basically. They're the spark plug. They're what gets you their chunks of yardage. But, I mean, it's not discrediting Siemian. He's a great quarterback, and he's going to put up numbers. But combining those two together, it's really tough to replace that kind of productivity because, you know, like I said, it's the spark plug. It's tough to think about what Northwestern's going to be like without Kane Coulter. It's definitely a gut punch to Northwestern fans, you know, so to speak, because that's a tough loss. I don't know.
Well, Northwestern put up 30 points. I say 30 points because they had those 2 defensive touchdowns, which is really the difference in the game. But they put up 30 points with Kane Coulter on the sidelines and Venrick Mark out with an injury. And the backup running back for Northwestern, Trayvon Green, came in and had 16 carries for 129 yards, averaging 8 yards a carry, and he busted out a 55-yard touchdown run. So the cupboards of Northwestern are actually full of talent, and you've got to be excited if you're a Northwestern fan. We're going to go to a tweet. Well, honestly, this is the only person that we couldn't get to comment because, or even sifting through the Northwestern Sippin' on Purple feed, because I'm pretty sure that Sippin' on Purple feed was drunk the entire game, and a lot of it was just all over the board. It was a great follow, but not really good in terms of like giving out solid information. So Ohio State goes out to face this Cal team that put up 30 points. And they look – this could be an early season test for the Buckeyes. I know there's been a lot made of their schedule, but Cal looked good at home, and it's not easy to go to the West Coast and beat anybody.
No, I agree. I definitely think Cal is not going to be a pushover. Obviously, Ohio State's going to win this game. But, you know, like you said, traveling to the West Coast is tough. That's like, what, a three-hour time difference from Ohio. So, you know, that's going to take some time to get used to. And it's, you know, Cal isn't exactly a bad team. You know, they're rebounding. And I definitely don't think they're just going to lie down and take it from Ohio State. I definitely think they're going to put up a fight. But, of course, obviously Ohio State's probably going to win in the end. But Cal's, yeah, like I said, Cal's definitely, they've got it going in the right direction.
Well, so we're going to move on over to Wisconsin, who, again, returns with a bruising offensive line and two running backs that can destroy. They've got Melvin Gordon. They've got James White, who combined for almost 300 yards rushing, albeit against a very poor UMass team. But you run the ball for almost 400 yards in a game, and you amass 600 yards of total offense. You have a new head coach. You're breaking in a new system. The fact that they just came in and steamrolled UMass, you got to feel good that Wisconsin is going to be a threat in the leaders.
Absolutely. Oh, sorry to cut you off. Absolutely. I think Wisconsin, you know, they're back-to-back-to-back conference champions. Granted, they relied on Ohio State being ineligible last year, but, right. You know, they've got a lot to lot they've built off of. And I really feel like they're going to have another nice year. I really like Melvin Gordon, what he brings to the table. I think he's going to be an excellent fill-in for the production they lose with Monty Ball. And I definitely think they're going to have a nice, solid year. And it's always great to open up with your first game with a new coach with a win, especially the one against UMass like they had.
A little off topic, but that's a stadium that I have got to see at a game at. I've heard nothing but positive things about the game day atmosphere at Camp Randall, the stadium shaking when they do jump around. I've got to see a game there. Have you had the opportunity to do that?
No, the jump around is what, that's one thing I want to do. It's kind of getting off topic too, but what I've wanted to do is always take like a Big Ten tour of every single stadium. And just to take in an atmosphere. It doesn't even have to be against Michigan. I just want to watch a game in each stadium in the Big Ten. I think that'd be pretty cool.
Well, that's a good transition, because I actually did have the opportunity to visit a Big Ten stadium a couple years ago when I was the editor-in-chief of my student newspaper at the University of South Florida, who got their ass handed to them by motherfucking McNeese State. They paid them $400K to beat them. We're not going to get on that topic because I can't even wrap my brain around that. But in 2005, I had the opportunity to go see a game at Penn State, and that is the best game day experience, aside from going to the Michigan-Ohio State game, that I've ever been around. My job at the paper was to write about the game day experience, because at USF, they had a young football program. They'd only had football for 8 years. So we drove up to Happy Valley to see the game, parked, and it was my job to write about the experience. Everybody that we bumped into were so gracious. They gave us free drinks, free food, and the guys that I'm still friends with, guys that I wrote with in that paper, they had to drag me into the stadium because I was shit-faced by the time I got to the stadium. And I'm up in the press box, like half asleep. I got writers staring at me like, who is this kid? Then my buddy gives me a press pass. I go down to the field, and I stumble and almost like fall into Joe Paterno on the field, and I'm it's Joe Paterno. It was embarrassing, but it was an amazing experience, and I would love to go see a game at Penn State again. That was just, the crowd was intense. And we have a quote from top five Twitter followers at Run the Dive. Josh, if you don't follow at Run the Dive, you have to. I've already told him he is our podcast spirit animal. He is hilarious and he does a good job. And he's good not just for Penn State, for all sports. His thoughts on Penn State after that first game, breaking in the freshman quarterback, highly recruited Christian Hackenberg. He says, reserved but positive overall. The team has its issues, namely depth, but Hackenberg looks like he's the genuine article. And I'm going to agree with that. I saw the highlights of that game. I didn't get a chance to watch it. But the plays that I saw Hackenberg make as a freshman, I mean, between him and Shane Morris right now, you have to go Hackenberg because he's slinging it.
Yeah, granted, obviously, I think Hackenberg gets the upper hand considering Hackenberg is the guy at Penn State. I think he's definitely, so far, he looks like he's worth the hype that he was like coming out of high school. And I think he has Penn State going in the right direction. I think Bill O'Brien's a great coach, and his teams are always going to be prepared. Granted, you know, the scandal at Penn State and their repercussions of it.
Yeah,
but scholarship numbers.
O'Brien has done, it's nothing short of miraculous. You can say I'm an apologist, but the carpet bombing that school took to punish the players like that, you know, I'm never gonna agree with the sanctions that were put on Penn State to the degree that they were. But the fact that they've come out and they've scheduled games out of the country, you know, they're going to Hawaii. I think they're going to Ireland. Bill O'Brien's done an amazing job of keeping everything in check. And if he stays, then he's a golden god. That's the only way to put it, because he helped right a ship that was sinking fast.
No, I agree. I really do hope he stays. And the Michigan fan in me doesn't, but I, you know, a non-biased opinion, I really think he should stay, and I hope he does, because like you said, he'll be a god on that campus. You know, he probably won't be a Joe Paterno. I mean, it's probably unfair and unrealistic to compare the two, but I think if he stays, he will be the man on campus. I mean, no matter who walks in that stadium and who walks out of it, it's always going to be Bill O'Brien. And, you know, like you said, what he's done with that team is just nothing short of unbelievable.
Christian Hackenberg, in his first start at Penn State, almost threw for 300 yards. That's a big deal. And he's going to make freshman mistakes. That's inevitable. Freshmen make mistakes. But if they're going to go as far as he goes, because Syracuse has a good defense, but Penn State was only able to rush for 57 total yards in that game, and they had four turnovers. It was a slugfest. They win that game 23-17. But you've got, Pete said, Run the Dive. You've got to be cautiously optimistic after watching Hackenberg play.
No, I agree. The running game is definitely going to be an issue for them. But Hackenberg, you know, I can't say enough about how great he can be. It's like you said, you know, almost throw for 300 yards against a Syracuse team that's not awful, but they're not great. You saw last year, you know, they had a pretty good year, and obviously I think they're recovering too, because they also, it's their first game with a new coach, because I think their old coach went to Buffalo. So, it's definitely, I'm impressed with the way Penn State came out there and duked it out with Syracuse, and I definitely think, you know, they might have a pretty nice season as well.
Absolutely. All right, so we're going to move on to a couple of the lower points of the Big Ten season. Not necessarily low points, but Nebraska got itself a scare from the University of Wyoming last night. They felt like they had the game comfortably in hand, two late turnovers, and Wyoming's got the ball with a minute left, down three, with the potential to win that game, go into Nebraska and beat them. Nebraska defense gives up 602 yards to the Wyoming Cowboys after the beatdown that they took, the way their defense played in the Big Ten championship game last year. You can't call them the black shirts right now. Hell no. My brother calls them the black sharts because that's disgraceful Nebraska defense. And Dominican Sue, I don't know how he can watch that. So we talked to at BT Bowling from Nebraska, and his quote was actually probably up there as one of the funnier ones that we got, like Mike from Michigan State. He says, "It is like a sibling that tells you they are a better person, cleans everything up, but still can't hold the job because of basic reasons." I mean, everything that we heard in the offseason, they're going to be better, they're going to be better, they're going to be better. The quarterback for Wyoming almost threw for 400 yards, Brett Smith. He had a hell of a game, 4 touchdowns. But bright points for Nebraska, you've got Taylor Martinez, who threw for 3 touchdowns, who's – how long is that? He's got to go on his, like, 8th year at Nebraska. And you've got Amir Abdullah and Cross combining for 220 yards rushing. So they're going to be able to move the ball. Nebraska's going to have that offense. But if they don't shore up those defensive problems, they're going to get some issues. And
yeah, I agree.
We've got some background noise.
Yeah, why? I don't know why they had to do the vacuum right now. But if you can hear me, yeah, please excuse me while they do housework behind me.
That's okay, man. It's a Swiffer.
Yeah. You know, this is a good, intermission. Intermission. Okay, and they're done.
Did your dog take a shit on the floor or something?
Must have pooped on the floor or something. Yeah. Man.
All right.
But anyways, back to Nebraska. I think, Nebraska's defense was absolutely dreadful. If I was a Nebraska fan, I'd be up, and there they go again. And anyway, if I was a Nebraska fan, I'd be weeping into a pillow.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, it was awful.
It's hard to recover from the vacuum.
It really just killed the vibe.
I hear you.
You know, is Nebraska worth talking about anyway?
No, but you know who is worth talking about? Purdue and Iowa, the only two teams from the Big Ten to lose their game. Now, I can understand Purdue losing to Cincinnati because it's a quality opponent. Getting your doors blown off 42-7, not so much. But when you have a quarterback for Cincinnati named Munchie Legault, sometimes you just have to take your lumps. Best name in college football, hands down, Munchie Legault. I love that kid.
That is great.
He is worth. No, he's electric too, man. He's worth watching. So the Hazel era of Purdue. I mean, it's Purdue. They've got a big drum. They've got some of the best rappers, hands down, in the country. You saw that on the Big House Report. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be a long year for Purdue, man. I don't see it, and there's a good chance that they could be the worst team in the Big Ten it's either them or Iowa, and we'll talk about Iowa in a minute, but here is a quote from at Dad Boiler, Purdue fan, and this just pretty much sums up the whole experience. "Well, that sucked. Is it basketball season yet?" So Purdue's going to have some issue. I got the exact same tweet from Adam Jacoby from Blackheart Gold Pants when I asked him what his emotional state was for Iowa losing yesterday in heartbreaking fashion to Northern Illinois University. "Is it basketball season yet?" Now, I got a more in-depth response from Plan Sick Days. Both these guys write for Blackheart Gold Pants. You can follow them at Adam Jacoby. Follow Adam Jacoby. And at Plan Sick Days. At Plan Sick Day says, "There's 5 stages of grief, and I'm in the bargaining stage. It's been lots of, if only Iowa did this or that." So, if only Iowa didn't give Ferentz that huge buyout, they may be able to get a coach.
Right. No, I agree. And, well, the thing is, too, Northern Illinois isn't a bad team. It's not like Iowa lost to a bottom dweller.
No.
But, you know, there's still no excuse. And, you know, overall, I think the biggest win to take away from the Iowa game is this chick that blew a 341 BAC that tried to get on the field. I think that's the biggest win of all.
She's a celebrity there. She's signing autographs. Did you see that?
I did not. I missed that.
Oh, yeah. Check out the Blackheart Gold Pants feed, man. The chick who ran onto the field and got arrested and went to jail blew a .341. You could light her breath on fire, and her name on Twitter has vodka in it.
Yes.
She you'll have to look that story up. It's on Deadspin. I know you linked to it on the Big House Report, so check that out. But she's out signing autographs in town for the things that she did, which is insane. But you know what? They've been rated as a high party school, so I can see it.
Well, and it's a funny thing, too, is if you think about it, Miguel Cabrera is batting .358 right now. And compare her to BAC, she'd be a starting all-star for any baseball team.
She's the Mike Trout of drinking.
Yes, she is. Mike Trout or even the Bryce Harper. That's a clown question, bro.
I like to call him Bruce. He's Bruce to me. I love it because dudes named Bruce have faux hawks and say clown question, bro. All right, so Iowa lost four games by 4 points or less last season. I stole that from an ESPN article, but you're right. Northern Illinois is not a bad team, but it's a team that Iowa should be able to beat. Jordan Lynch, their quarterback, he accounts for over 300 yards of total offense. He gets three touchdowns, and they score 10 points in the last 5 minutes to just give away that game. And you look at Iowa's schedule – and there's really no excuse for them losing, but, I mean, they get Missouri State, who they should be able to beat, but then they play Iowa State. They play Western Michigan, who played Michigan State tough, Minnesota, Michigan State, Ohio State. I mean, they've got a tough schedule, and this could be a really long-ass year for the Hawkeyes.
I agree. And, you know, like you said, you mentioned a Kirk Ferentz buyout. I recently did speak to Adam Jacoby, and that's what he mentioned, too. You know, if they have another bad year, is Ferentz on the hot seat? I say yes, but they can't afford to let him go, and which is the sad part because they're going to
bullshit.
Well, yeah.
Are they willing to?
Right. That's a lot of money to fork out. I mean, they're not exactly a high grossing athletic department.
Well, that's you know what? They're in the big. They get that Big Ten network money. And if right now Charlie Weiss is earning $3 million from his contract at Notre Dame, coaching Kansas and being a piece of shit down there. If you can pay Charlie Weiss to not coach at Notre Dame, you can pay Kirk Ferentz no matter. I mean, that's a proud program. I remember in the 80s when I was growing up, that was one of the most vicious rivalries in the Big Ten between Michigan and Iowa because Fry, I mean, he had those guys playing. They were the number one team in the country at one point. They always played Michigan tough, but it's just gone. I don't believe that the guy can't coach. You don't forget how to coach from one season to the next, but there is that Lloyd Carr syndrome where the way that you coach no longer applies to the current state of college football, and that's Kirk Ferentz to a T. He's stuck in his ways, and he's no longer a fit for the current age of college football.
No, I agree. I think it's really sad the way a lot of teams have hit a downward spiral. You know, it's pretty sad, and I think, like you said, it's probably just going to be another crap year for Iowa standards. And, it's bad for the conference, too, because, I mean, granted, you do love seeing teams suck because it helps your team out. But you want to see your conference do well outside of conference play. So, again, it's just another disappointing week as far as the conference goes, in terms of performances all around the board, really.
All right, so enough of the Big Ten, the rest of the Big Ten and what they're doing. I think we've talked enough. We've talked for about 40 minutes about our Big Ten recap. Let's talk some Michigan football. Let's go right into it. Who is your boner for this week? Who made you go 6 to midnight watching that game on Saturday?
Dennis Norfleet, all day long. That reverse that he almost scored by a shoestring. I don't know what he fell over, but it's just – oh, man, I wish he scored that touchdown. But, yeah, it's definitely my boner of the week is definitely Dennis Norfleet.
I'm going to switch gears a little bit. I'm going to go on the defensive side of the ball. I am going to go with your vacuum. Your vacuum. I have a boner for. No. My boner for the week for the Michigan Wolverines is none other than the guy who took a lot of flack in the offseason, the biggest question mark on defense, Gerard Wilson, who came up and laid the wood and absolutely annihilated a guy on that screen, didn't let anything get behind him. And the Michigan defense as a whole, I feel bad saying this, but they broke bones on Saturday. They knocked the starting quarterback and the starting running back from Central Michigan, broken clavicle, and I think broken ankle. And I'm not saying that's a good thing, but the hard-hitting, smash mouth, get into the backfield, lay the wood, Michigan defense has returned. And what Greg Madison's been able to do with that defense after the dark ages of Rich Rodriguez and the Gerg stuffed animal incident is nothing short of fantastic.
No, I agree too. It was really disappointing too, because I was just mentioning to my girlfriend who I went with the game with, I was just talking about like, oh, Zerline Tipton, you know, the running back, he's gonna be a problem for Michigan. He's a great running back, and the next thing you know, out with a broken bone. So I probably jinxed him, and he probably will never hear this, but I apologize for his broken, what was it, broken ankle or clavicle, whatever one it was. I apologize.
Something broke.
Something broke, and I apologize for it.
So we got to see the debut, 27 red shirts burned, none bigger than the red shirts of Derek Green and Shane Morris. Drake Johnson goes down with an injury, so the depth chart moves up. You've got Devion Smith, you've got Derek Green, and you've got Fitz. And I got to say, they all looked pretty good in their moments, but Derek Green, his ass running down the field, rumbling, stumbling, and going for 30 yards was a welcome sight. They and the touchdown that he scored, where he went through two guys to score, I got to be honest with you, man, that's exactly what this team needs. Their red zone issues were well documented, and the threat of having all three of those guys and the rotation, I think it's going to pay huge dividends.
No, absolutely. I loved it. You know, I was really excited for Derek Green, considering the amount of scrutiny he's gotten just because he gained 20 pounds. Who knows if it's good or bad weight, and including that injured ankle that kind of set him back a little bit during camp. I definitely think that was a good moment for him, especially including that 30-yard run that he had. He did look pretty quick, too, running down the sidelines. You know, I wasn't expecting him to score or anything, but, you know, he showed a really good burst on that play, too. But, you know, as far as Devion Smith, I think he had good moments out there. I mean, I kind of felt like he couldn't shine as much as Derek Green did, because he kind of got swallowed up in the backfield a couple of times. But overall, I think the running game should be vastly improved this season, especially considering there's no Denard, so he's not going to snake all the carries. So I definitely think, you know, the running game is going to be vastly improved, and I definitely think, you know, it's, and that also in dimension too, the offensive line too, that they had gave Gardner pretty much a lot of the time all day to throw, and that's also going to help with the running game as well.
So let's talk a little bit before we move on about the defense, the rotation on the defensive line, the fact that even on the first couple of series you had guys come in and out nonstop, fresh bodies, and it showed. You know, there was never a real lapse. There was never a time where you thought the defensive line was winded. Let's talk about some of the freshmen and Brendan Byer. Who impressed you on the defensive line?
You know, I think, you know, the defensive line as a whole, I think everyone played a great game. I can't really call out anyone in particular. I mean, on defense as a whole, I think Cam Gordon had a great game. I think he surprised a lot of people. He, you know, had a sack. He had a couple of, he was in the right position. He didn't really exactly, you know, looked lost out there or anything. So again, he's one of those guys that kind of didn't live up to expectations that were placed upon him. So like I said, I think the whole defense, you know, played a pretty decent game. I'm kind of worried about the safety position, though. You know, I was kind of shocked to hear that Thomas Gordon got suspended for violation of team rules, whatever that means. So that's kind of scary. But, you know, overall, I think, you know, the defense had a pretty good game, but I want to see what they look like against an opponent like Notre Dame next weekend.
All right, so let's talk a little Notre Dame football. They play Temple. They win 28-6. Tommy Rees throws three first-half touchdowns. Their defense does a good job. And Brian Kelly apparently did not open up his playbook, but they got to come to Michigan. They got to come to Ann Arbor for the last time, probably in a long time. And what what are you expecting for this game? It can't possibly end up any better than the first Under the Lights game, despite how poorly Michigan played for three quarters in that game to pull out the win. Last year, Denard Robinson had hands down the worst game of his career, and they still, Notre Dame had to eke it out and have great goal line defense to beat Michigan. They lose Everett Golson, but again, Reese is playing well. They've got Louis Nix back on the defensive line, but they're starting a new running back. This is a team with a lot of question marks and something I don't really know a lot about, and we're going to go over it later in this week when we interview the Subway Domer. But your initial thoughts going into Notre Dame week?
You know, again, like you said, I don't really know how this game is going to go. I'd like to assume that Michigan has, you know, the better team, especially because the question marks that Michigan has are a lot smaller comparing them to Notre Dame. You know, they have to replace the production that Everett Golson probably would have given you this year. You lose Theo Riddick. You lose guys like Manti Te'o and his fake girlfriend and, you know, stuff like that. It's just, I think Michigan will win this game, considering the year before, if they would have had a better first half, I think that game would have been completely different. But I do expect, you know, it's a rivalry game, so I do expect, you know, a tough fought game. And it's, I don't know, man. I would love to say Michigan wins this one, but this one is a toss-up. I mean, it's a lot closer than people like to believe.
Absolutely, and I think it's going to come down to turnovers and defense. And in that regard, I mean, you've got Tommy Reese, who in the past versus Michigan has been a bit of a turnover machine, but Michigan was kind of loose with the football, two bad picks. But it's really going to come out with decision-making. If Devin Gardner stays within the system, is patient, and you know, they have the luxury of being at home, I think Michigan has a great shot, but I'm not overlooking Notre Dame. I think they can come into Ann Arbor and win this game, and Vegas has got it as a pick 'em, and I agree with that. I think if they win, it's by 3 points, and it's that home field spread.
No, I agree. It's, you know, 3 points is probably fair. You know, it's, I don't know. I guess we'll find out later this week. But, you know, it's going to be tough. You know, it's not, you know, except for that 1 year, what was it? Was it 06 where we whooped up on them?
Oh, yeah.
Irish, the fig thing Irish?
Yeah, that was Brady Quinn. Yeah, the fig thing, the misspelling. Well, there was a guy for South Carolina, the kicker, where it was just Carolyn.
Yeah, that's he. He looked like he was about 16.
He looked terrified.
Wow, terrified, and he looked like, yeah, he looked underage.
All right, well, hey, that's going to wrap it up for this episode of the Sophisticated Boner, a Michigan Man podcast. We're going to be on twice this week. Later in the week, we'll be interviewing again the Subway Domer. Thank you to all of the guys from the Big Ten Recap, 11 Warriors, BT Bowling, Mike W. Scout. Ace Anbender, he tossed in a tweet, friend of the podcast, and his tweet was, "We have depth, and it's good." And then he cries a single tear. And I'm going to go with Ace sentiments on that. It's good to see depth in the right places, good defensive depth in the secondary on the defensive line. I am Mark the Nomad, and for Joshua Henschke, look forward to us again this week, and we'll see you soon. Good night.